Welcome to another edition of the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, managing editor of the Texans Wire, which you can find at texanswire.usatoday.com. You can follow us on Twitter at the Texans Wire. You can follow me on Twitter at the Real Mark Lane. I'm joined as always by John Crumpler, who does outstanding work for the Texans Wire as well. Hey, John, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Mark. Hey, guys, my name is John Crumpler. If you haven't listened to the podcast before, I do a lot of draft analysis and opinion pieces over on the Texans Wire. You can follow me on Twitter, and I've changed it. It's at John H. Crumpler. Make sure to give me a follow. We've got a ton of draft coverage coming as we enter the final month of the
process. I convinced him that since there's so many people out there with the internet and can do their own research, we don't need doctors anymore, so he should just be a sports writer.
Okay. Okay, Mark. I don't know if I'm feeling that confident
right.
In my writing. I like medicine. Let's be very clear. Medicine is a good profession.
Yeah. Now, by the way, how's all of that coming? We haven't done a status report lately. How's all of that coming along?
Oh, yeah. It's probably been a month. Guys, I've had some crazy experiences. I spent 2 weeks in gyn surgery. I worked with an oncologist, and we removed ovarian tumors, which was pretty sweet. Also pretty amazing to get to go tell a woman, and you know, she doesn't have cancer, and how amazing that is. And then this past 2 weeks, I've just been outpatient. For the women listening, they probably already know, but men, OBGYN doctors, incredible. They're surgeons, they're medicine doctors, they do it all. So I'm having a good time with
that's
it,
great. You know, I feel like the more good doctors that we can bring into this world, it'll be a better place, because as I'm sure you've heard, if you're a doctor and you've saved one person, it's like you've saved the world. And for a lot of people, I mean, it's just such a buoy to make it through life when you really do have a good doctor, someone who believes your story, somebody who's on your side. And even if it is bad news, just somebody who's a fighter, you know? So it's really great to hear that you've got that enthusiasm and passion for medicine.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, it's definitely, like you said, it is a privilege to get to step into those moments in people's lives, and one that I do not take lightly. So I'm excited to be doing it. And thank you.
All right. Well, what would you do if you walked in to the exam room tomorrow and there was Bruce Arians, freshly retired and moved into a senior football consultant role with the Buccaneers? How would you feel about that?
One, you'd never know, because that's a HIPAA violation. But if we want to talk about Bruce Arians, the coach, you know, I really like what Bruce Arians has done here. Just before we started, Ian Rappaport tweeted, and he said, Arians kind of made a calculated decision to hand the team off to Todd Bowles while it was still good. And I think that's a really impressive and admirable thing to do, that Todd Bowles, his first swing at Tampa Bay, is not going to be when they're in cap hell, Brady retired in a transition year. He's going to get to run the ship on what should be a Super Bowl contender. And I mean, we'll see what people think of the Rams, but what, at worst, the second best team in the NFC? What did you think of his decision?
Yeah, I thought it came rather abruptly, and I don't mean to sow division or anything, but what about Byron Leftwich? I thought it was interesting that they turned it over to Bowles, who has had his shot, who you know what you're dealing with, as opposed to a lieutenant of Arians in Byron Leftwich. I wouldn't figure that him assuming head coaching duties would affect his chemistry and involvement with Tom Brady at all. But I thought that part of it was a little puzzling, but nevertheless, it is nice to see that whether it's Bowles, whether it's Leftwich, that they're actually going to get to take over a rocking roster, as opposed to, like you said, one that is in cap hell and having to atone for the sins of trying to win another Super Bowl. So in that regard, it is nice to see.
Mark, I will agree with you. My first thought when I saw it was, I wonder if Byron Leftwich regrets trying his power play in Jacksonville. Because the assumption was, okay, if this doesn't work out, it's fine. I'm going to be the next head coach in Tampa Bay. And now he's clearly not going to be the next head coach in Tampa. And, you know, you never know when those opportunities are going to come along.
Right. And so for there may be some drama this year with regards to Leftwich and so forth, but all of that will get taken care of and cleared up. And if you really want to know what's going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and follow along with this situation, check out our colleague Luke Easterling's work at thebuckswire.usatoday.com. He had it up lickety split, the story on.
Dude, he is such a good writer and draft analyst. If you guys are not following him in general, Luke's a beast.
Yes, he also runs the Draft Wire too. So that's two wires that he runs, and he does it so expertly. You know, I got to talk about Luke for a minute here, because he really rescues us at the NFL wires, because he doesn't just do a round one mock. He helps out us managing editors of teams who don't draft for the first time until round three. So he'll do a three-round mock, and that's always good, because now you have material. Because usually when you see all the other mock drafts, it's, oh, here, I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Here's my 3.0 mock that only goes through the first round. You're like, I can't use it. I can't aggregate it. But when Luke comes out with his mock drafts, they're three rounders. So I got something to work with. At least that's how it was for me last year.
So Luke was a bit of a hero for you during the Bill O'Brien trade all of our draft picks era.
Yes, that's correct. He was the real MVP.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right, next topic, Mark. I'm excited to talk about this.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we talked about do your own research and who needs a doctor anymore. I mean, we're starting to get into conspiracy theories here, John. So let's just move. Yeah, right. Let's move on to another conspiracy theory, which is Matt Corral. Would you take him in the second round at pick 37th overall?
Okay, so I see a lot of tweets. Guys, let me tell you where this stems from. Is I see tweets, and it always seems to come at 37. People have strong opinions about number three. You know, it's, I want Trayvon Walker. I want Kayvon Thibodeau. I want Akeem Okonwu. And then at 13, people like Jordan Davis. They like Drake London. But at 37, that really appears to be, okay, let's ask Twitter. Let's inquire, what do I do here? And for whatever reasons on these simulators, Matt Corral is always available. And I just want to start by saying Matt Corral is not going to be there at pick 37. He is a first-round draft pick. He's a great quarterback prospect. But I texted Mark this week. If Matt Corral was available in Houston, and I'm going to catch some flack for this, I would absolutely take him at 37th overall. The team has not found a franchise quarterback yet. We're still treading water. We're about to see if Davis Mills is the guy. But, you know, there's just as good of a chance he could go the way of Drew Locke as he could go the way of Russell Wilson. And until you've got the guy, you got to keep trying to find the guy. So I've been saying this week, I think if Matt Corral somehow fell, I really like him in Houston. He loves to play ball. He runs a little more than he should and takes more contact, but that's coachable. He's an accurate passer. He reads the field. He can make every throw. Mark, would it be a disaster if Houston kept swinging on the quarterback position until they missed or until they hit?
I mean, I think so, just because I would like to have even a bad Drew Locke season out of Davis Mills to know he's not the guy. I feel like how bereft the roster was of talent in 2021, that he was working at a deficit, and it wasn't exactly fair. With Drew Locke, when he took over, even as a rookie with the Denver Broncos, you still had Von Miller there. Kareem Jackson was doing some good things. You had a capable receiving core. Phillip Lindsay had a 1,000-yard season. So there were still some weapons. There was still some leadership in place. It wasn't like the 2021 Texans. So I would at least like to see Mills as the guy, even if it is the skill positions that they have now, and just, you know, see what happens. And then if he doesn't demonstrate any meaningful progress or he takes a step back, then I would execute that particular strategy. But even so, here's how I look at it is, even if Mills isn't the guy and he's not manifesting it as such, I look at Houston's 23 through 24 first round picks as a bundle that you can use to target number one overall in either the 23 draft or the 24 draft to go get the guy when he comes available. To use a cheesy Star Wars analogy, I'm comfortable using Davis Mills as my Count Dooku and the first round picks as the bundle to go get my Anakin.
Wow. That was a pretty in-depth Star Wars analysis too. I'm not sure all of our listeners are going to get that one, but I hear exactly what you're saying. And I agree with you. Also, Dooku got played. Poor guy. But yeah, Davis Mills probably does deserve a shot. And I'm not advocating that this is like my preferred path or what I'm praying will happen. Like, I don't think Corral will get past Detroit at 32 or again at 34. I think the Giants would take him. I think someone would trade up for him. Heck, I don't think he gets past the Saints at 18. But I guess my larger point to say is this organization needs to be very open-minded as we move forward with Davis Mills. But what you said is right, Mark, because if it doesn't work out this year, we're probably going to know very, very quickly. We're going to have seen 20 starts from him, over 20 starts by the end of the year. And forget the bundle. We're just going to be able to go take our guy. If Davis Mills is bad, this roster isn't talented enough to surpass their 4-win total from last year. I would imagine Bryce Young or CJ Stroud would be Houston's outright.
And you got to remember what Caserio said when he met with the media on March 19th, which was a Saturday morning. But hey, when you deal a franchise quarterback on a Friday night, that's what happens, is you have pressers on Saturday mornings. Anyway, so he said that Davis Mills has certainly earned an opportunity, you know, because of what he has shown. But as an organization, they're not just going to shut the door on the possibility of taking a quarterback. So I think if it makes sense, if it's good value for Matt Corral, like you were talking about, or as I put in the show notes, if it's a round two type of situation, I mean, maybe you think about it, because of the value of that quarterback and how it impacts your roster. And also it's doing what I think you can't shy away from with this roster, which is competition. Wherever you can create competition, unless it's like Laremy Tunsil, I mean, you don't need to create competition with him. But on other points of the roster, quarterback, running back, receiver, guard, center, there's so many positions that you can't afford to just say, oh, well, we don't need competition. You need competition, and quarterback is one of them. And if a guy like Matt Corral is falling, you know, and it's pick 37, maybe you do it. Or maybe you fleece someone who wants him.
That would be huge. If you could pick up an additional second rounder, another third, or picks next year, that would be great. I mean, you and I have both spoken at length all about Houston getting more draft capital because, frankly, in a perfect world, we probably need about 10 to 11 new starters.
You know what?
If not more.
If we were talking about the 2019 Texans, okay, and then Thanos snapped Deshaun Watson, I might take Matt Corral for those Texans. I just don't feel like where Houston is right now, and with this incoming quarterback class, that there's a quarterback that's going to rescue them or accelerate the rebuild, I feel like you just may as well see what you got with Davis Mills. I mean, you can't go broke as long as you're taking a profit, and I feel like that's what continuing to invest in Mills represents, is a profit margin, albeit a small one.
Yeah, and I really agree with your larger point that no one player is going to dramatically increase the amount of wins this team's going to have. I know we're going to talk about it later, what our preferred schedule might look like. And when I was thinking about that, I'm like, what could the first four games be for Houston to go 4-0? I kind of paused and I asked myself, would it be a good thing for this team to go 4-0 right now? Because frankly, they're at least one more draft away. So you're right. Why waste at the quarterback position when you can take more guaranteed hits elsewhere?
We do have it up on Texans Wire right now. I basically talked about how there's a scenario out there where Houston could bring in Jalen Hurts, presuming that the Eagles trade their 15th and 19th overall picks in round one in this year's draft up to number three to take Kenny Pickett, according to Cody Benjamin. I don't know why you would do that, but okay.
I would not do that.
In this scenario, though, Jalen Hurts comes to the Texans. Do you feel like Jalen Hurts would help the Texans? I feel like it's the same thing. The roster's so bad, and these quarterbacks aren't just so game-breaking, like the guy they lost this month, that, I mean, you know, who cares? I'd try to figure out how to trade Jalen Hurts as soon as I got a hold of him.
Yeah, I think that Jalen Hurts is a limited player, like Davis Mills, but he just has a different set of limitations. I think he would look really bad on our team with this offensive line. We do not have Philly's line. We do not have their run game. Yeah, no, I do not want Jalen Hurts in Houston.
Yeah.
Which was really on the table at one point.
Yeah, I think that he would just get gobbled up. He would just be cannon fodder. Now, you've done a really great series on the Texans Wire this week, and it's the Draft and Identity series. So we have three of them on Thursday morning. We've got the Ground and Pound Texans, the No Fly Zone Texans, and the Davis Mills Texans. And I noticed that with the Ground and Pound and the Davis Mills Texans, that Ikem Ekwonu is a first round pick in both of those identities. Do you think that, now I know that Laremy Tunsil's at left tackle, I know that Titus Howard's not going to move anywhere from right tackle, but do you think that maybe if Houston has a shot at Ekwonu, that he's the key to completing the rebuild on the offensive line, especially given that he also has interior flexibility?
I won't go as far as to call him the key. I do think that there's not a scenario where Houston won't have a shot at him. I don't think he's going to Jacksonville, and I don't think he's going to Detroit. He'll be on the board for us. But to go as far as an end-all, no. He's a really nice player. He's my second-ranked offensive tackle, and if he was going to go play guard, he'd be my number one guard. And it's nice to project him into the offense because, unlike an Evan Neal, which you and I both roll our eyes when we see him mock to the Texans, because Evan Neal would force Titus Howard to play guard, which, as we saw last offseason and during the season, he's frankly very average at that. But Ekwonu would be able to slide in nicely next to Tunsil or Howard. And I don't think it's necessarily a must, but if they want to give Pep Hamilton a sufficient run game, an offensive line that can create the blocks that his scheme wants, and to honestly salvage what looks like one of the worst interior offensive lines in the league, I think he's a really nice pick there. I know that they won't do it, but it's just hard to say what Houston should do in terms of picking those offensive tackles until they make a commitment towards or away from Titus Howard. And until Caserio knows that he's going to make that pick, which means we won't hear before the draft, it sounds like he's not going to say anything.
All right, well, let's play scenarios for a minute, which, by the way, my family, not to go off on a jag, but my mom's side of the family, that's their favorite thing to do is play scenarios. And, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, they'll seriously say –
it sounds a little scary.
They'll seriously say stuff like, if we wouldn't – if it would have been – 2 days before the hospital couldn't have treated Mark for his stage 4 cancer, do you think he would have lived? Like, would he still, like, they come up, they do, they play scenarios. It's just so hilarious. But so anyway, because of that, I think there should be a cereal called Scenarios, you know, and it's just a, like, ooh, wow. I wonder what's in this bowl. But anyway, let's play scenarios for a minute.
You have a million-dollar idea.
All right.
Okay.
Aiden Hutchinson, he goes to Jacksonville. Kyle Hamilton goes to Detroit. What are you doing at number 3?
I am riding Kayvon Thibodeau, defensive end, Oregon, and I am running it to the
podium. So you're not doing Ekwonu?
No. I would confidently take Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau over Ekwonu.
All right, second bowl of scenarios. It's 13th overall, and Ekwonu's on the board. What are you doing?
Okay, if he somehow makes it to 13, I really don't care who else is there. His value and ability to maybe play tackle if we can't figure it out with Titus Howard. I'm probably running Ekwonu's name to the podium at 13.
Yeah, that probably seems like it'd be a good scenario.
Mark, let me give you one. Aiden Hutchinson goes number 1 to Detroit, and Kayvon Thibodeau goes number 2. Or my bad, Kayvon Thibodeau goes 2 to Detroit, Hutchinson goes 1 to Jacksonville. So the top 2 defensive ends are off the board. Are you taking Ekwonu, or are you taking our guy
Hamilton? Because I think that the quickest way to the rebuild is through the defense, by the way, because you've got a defensive-minded coach who's calling the plays, and he's got his son as the linebackers coach, and, you know, they really believe in their defense, that it's evolved and got rejuvenated in college. And so I would go with defense. And also, I feel like Hamilton's a guy that even when Lovie Smith and the Tampa 2 goes away and you bring in whatever, that Hamilton's still going to have a place in the defense.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting to watch Twitter this week. A lot of the national analysts are turning on Hamilton. Our position is kind of being dug up. And when you combine that, in addition, with Vegas, they currently have Ekwonu as a big favorite to be drafted to Houston. I think it's an interesting.
Yeah, play. I think, yeah. If they, I just feel like it's too much of a pigeonhole to do that, to take Ekwonu number 3. Because I just don't feel like the offense is. They've got so many more needs, and I feel like the defense is almost complete. You know, you've got your, and what I mean by that is you've got your starters, your role players, your contributors in Grenard and Lopez, and Kamu Grugier-Hill is going to excel at linebacker. You even got Neville Hewitt coming back, which I think is subtly a big deal. You know, and Desmond King, maybe you can – you just don't have a playmaker. Mark. And that's what Hamilton represents. And there's no play – or and even Thibodeau, that's what he represents. And I don't feel like that even if they take Ekwonu at 3, that activates any playmakers, because you don't even have a running back that you can say, and there's the guy who's going to open up the holes for him. So – that's why I feel like at 3, you go with Hamilton or Thibodeau.
Yeah, the one thing about Ekwonu, and this will be the last point I want to make, is I agree with you that it feels like a waste of time if they do not give Davis Mills more weapons to throw to, and they don't give him a real running back. Because right now, it doesn't matter how well they can block. I don't really trust any of those guys to produce a top 16, top 10 running game you'd be looking to produce with that kind of investment in the offense.
Yeah, this is going to be a Lovie Smith team. Meaning that there's not really going to be an offense. It's going to be defense and special teams. This is going to be the 05-06 Bears at best.
Poor Pep Hamilton.
What?
Well, speaking of Pep, though, and even though it might not be run his way, the Texans did make an addition at wide receiver this week.
Oh, yeah, DeShaun Hamilton. What'd you make of that? I mean, you know, he just seems like another veteran guy that a young guy should compete against.
He's actually on the younger side. I think this is going to be his fourth year in the league. He's a former Penn State standout. When I look at Hamilton, he has the kind of profile that people were frustrated last year when Nick Caserio kept signing all of these really old veterans. And DeShaun Hamilton is the kind of guy that I thought Caserio should have been signing. People who had, you know, moderate draft capital investment, who'd been buried on depth charts, and that there is some potential for upside. With DeShaun Hamilton, we have never really gotten to see what he can do in the league. And if today was opening day with the roster, I'd probably have him as our third best receiver. I think you'd have Nico Collins on one boundary, Brandon Cooks in the slot, or Brandon Cooks on the outside, and DeShaun Hamilton. He's a smaller guy, but talking to people who covered Denver, he sounds like he's a strong run blocker, which is going to go over well with Pep Hamilton. I actually like the signing a lot, considering where our roster is right now, in which it's really not hard to make the wide receiver room better.
Yeah, as someone that you want to bring in for your offseason workouts and see what he's got, see if he's recovered from that ACL that he sustained in last May, you know, he's a veteran that you can take a look at, but I think the solution to fixing the offense has to come from investment, whether it's in draft picks, only draft picks. I think that's the way. Whether it's a Drake London, you know, or if they can get a hold of Christian Watson, I think that that's where you're really going to help the receiving core, because you've got enough guys that go about it the right way, like a Brandon Cooks and Chris Moore and so forth. You need
Chris Conley.
Yeah, you need, I think, younger guys, younger talent for Mills to make a connection with, or for Mills' younger successor to make a connection with. But, yeah, Hamilton, he's one of these reclamation guys, which that is a good point you bring up. If you're going to be the worst in the league and it's going to be about process-oriented as opposed to results-oriented, it would behoove you to go ahead and give shots to those guys who were buried on depth charts or who – were drafted by a previous regime that got fired, and now here they are, and they, you know, because you've got to figure that Caserio, being the former director of player personnel for the Patriots, and even James Lipfert and Matt Bezirgan, that they have profiles from their 2017, 18, 19 drafts of guys that may be available. And, you know, bring them in and let's see what happens. And I think they tried that with, wasn't it Anthony Miller? Was that the receiver? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, right. From Chicago.
Yeah, and to some extent they did that, but you're right. I think they should do more of that, not just go with, I mean, you need a veteran, like at least one or two veteran per position group to show the guys how to do it the right way. But the rest of the time it should be just these second chance guys.
Mm-hmm. I forgot Anthony Miller was on this team. 2021 was a weird year But yeah, this is a similar, I think Anthony Miller was a second round pick, but Hamilton was a fourth round pick. And you're right, if it's going to be process oriented, put some items on the roster that have the chance to, I'm going to go back to what you were talking about, profits earlier, a chance to accrue interest and actually develop as an investment on your team instead of the Christian Kirksies and the Chris Conleys of the world, who we very much know who they are. Because, you know, as it stands with the wide receiver group, I'm not going to say it's a must draft, but it's a position that I would very much expect and want to be addressed within our first five picks. So somewhere between 13 and 80, because right now Davis Mills does not have enough weapons to run a viable vertical offense in today's NFL.
Davis Mills has, if Davis Mills had an arsenal, he would basically have nunchucks. No, he would have a bow and arrow. That's what he would have.
Yeah, that sounds right. Maybe a spear.
Yeah, maybe, but a bow and arrow, because Brandon Cooks is the archer.
Oh, that's true.
I always thought he got it from the TV show. I'm kidding.
We're making a lot of pop culture references on
Yeah,
show.
It's because we actually get Vig off of it. So if you want to watch the latest of your favorite streaming and of TV and movies and everything, just go to Texans Wireflix, promo code I don't know. I was gonna go with Watt, but you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't know, like, if you were to do a promo, what would the promo code be for this team? It'd have to be Toro or Casario or something, because that's the face of the franchise right now.
I think it would be Brandon Cooks, Jonathan Grenard, and whoever the two first round picks are. And that's kind of with Davis Mills in the middle. Like, if you're doing a five man poster, and maybe you could have Toro in the background, like he's God or something with his mascot.
Yeah, that reminds me. I have to get the banner changed on the Texans Wire Twitter and Facebook, because it's got Lonnie Johnson and Justin Reed. I think Lonnie Johnson's even wearing number 32. So just to let you know,
it's my banner right now too. Mark, can we get Toro in the banner? Can that be our thing until the draft? I'm not kidding.
Yeah, no.
Can we please get Davis Mills and
no,
Toro?
I'm reminded of what I had our graphics guy at USA Today do for the 2020 draft, and it was applicable for the 21 draft too. It was the meme of SpongeBob and Patrick running in the yard in front of Squidward's house, and then Squidward's just looking at them through the blinds, just glaring at them, and it said Texans Wire. Because that's basically been the draft for the past 2 years.
It's been painful, but that's the past. Mark, I don't know who this guy is, but if he can make that meme, Toro in front of the really cool background, I'm telling you, it could be a home run.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll see if we can make it happen. By the way, our graphics guy does such a great job. Seriously, he does such a great job, but there's a bar and grill in Buffalo that takes his graphics, his game day graphics for Bills Wire, and they like take Bills Wire off of it and then use it as their Instagram poster, you know, to come watch the game and, you know, happy hour and all that.
It's
kind of
messed up.
The guy credit?
It's not okay. Dude, it would be so hard being an artist. They have their work stolen online all the time, I feel like. I feel like once a month I see a Twitter thread about an artist who's just been like horrifically ripped off or had their work stolen by somebody.
Exactly, and that's really what Bills fans and NFL fans felt like after watching the 2021 AFC Divisional against Kansas City, was that they had the outcome stolen because Patrick Mahomes engineered a wonderful comeback, and then they won the coin toss, and then the Chiefs drove down, scored a touchdown, game over, and they go on to lose in the AFC Championship game. So the NFL, in their typical overcorrection, You know, they went ahead and changed the overtime rules to where now, and this is only for the postseason, where each team gets a chance to possess the ball, regardless of whether or not the first team scored a touchdown or not. What do you make of the new rules, John?
This is why the NFL is the best in the business, Mark. They heard the fans, and they looked at the data, and it matched. During the regular season, the team that wins the coin toss only wins the game 52% of the time. You know, that's even. That if you looked for a significant effect there, you plotted it, I don't think the coin toss has one. But I think it's 10 of the last 12 or something crazy with overtimes in the playoffs. When it's just elite quarterbacks versus elite quarterbacks, these guys are going to score. So I thought the NFL did a great job. They didn't do more than they needed to, but they addressed a really, frankly, obvious problem. And I think the product will be better because of it. How did you
feel? I think that the application was good to have the rule change affect overtime. I mean, to affect the postseason as opposed to doing it across the board. The reality is in overtime, in the regular season, really you just need to get out of it and figure out who won and who lost. And if you two teams want to be garbage for 10 extra minutes, like the Lions and the Mason Rudolph quarterback Steelers last year, okay, all right, you all get a tie. But in terms of the postseason, I do feel like there does need to be a little more just a little more of a chance to really let it go, you know, to say, okay, we gave it our all. My team gave it their all. They couldn't get it done. They had their chances. You know, we weren't robbed. There's no ifs or buts. You know, that's just the way it is. And that's what Bills fans felt, and really NFL fans felt like what happened in that particular game was that they were robbed. It's like, but Josh Allen should have a rejoinder. Even if the Bills failed to match the touchdown, they should at least have a chance to match that touchdown drive that started off overtime. And again, I think that the application of it's good. If they did this for the regular season, oh, good grief. How many more ties are we going to have now because of this? But I think that the application in the postseason, because now you're going to maybe walk away and feel like, okay, this was the outcome. No one got shortchanged unless there was a bad call. This is just the way it is. And I think that the TV networks love it too, because they get more extended coverage. And so if you have the late game, and this leads into your late local news, I mean, and it goes into overtime, and now you get the two possessions, that's great. I mean, that is a great lead-in to your late local news. So I think it's a win for everybody.
Yeah, it just feels equitable. If the season's gone on for 4 months and you lose because you lost a coin toss, the fans want to see these elite quarterbacks both get to possess the ball. I think it's the players want to see their guys get a chance. And when you look at the outcomes where it's so stacked, it just feels like a win-win for everybody. And yeah, the TV partners who pay a lot to have these playoff games, I don't think they're going to mind it either, especially when, like you said, this isn't the regular season. They're not trying to get Mason Rudolph, get off my screen, I need to put on the next game. You know, they really want these games to be TV spectacles. And we were all sprinting to our TVs if we weren't watching when Tampa made a comeback against the Rams, or when, you know, Buffalo went to overtime against Kansas City. So you and I are both in agreement. I love it.
Exactly. So let's see if we have an accord when it comes to the final topic, which is what a favorable first four games for the Houston Texans looks like in 2022. And what I mean by this is, let's go back to 2020. It was horrendous. They started off at Kansas City on the Thursday night, and then they went, even though they had a 10-day rest, they hosted Baltimore in week two, and then they go on the road and they play Pittsburgh, and then in week four they host the Minnesota Vikings, who were also a playoff team from the year before. So that's 3 out of 4 games to open up the season that were playoff teams. And so then they started 0-4 and they fired Bill O'Brien. So that was, oh my gosh, a murderer's row. What would basically be the row of lined up carriages where you steal candy from a baby for the Houston Texans?
All right, here are my 4 games. If we want Houston to start 4-0, the anti-2020. So I think I would want to start at Jacksonville. They are similar to Houston, and they are probably bottom 5 in the league in talent. They paid a lot of new guys, but if you get Jacksonville early, you get them before Trevor Lawrence has had a lot of time to practice the new scheme with Doug Peterson, before he's developed a lot of chemistry with these weapons, before the defense has really had a time to mesh and integrate these new parts. I want to get Jacksonville on the schedule early because they are more talented than Houston, but they don't have the kind of continuity that Houston has in retaining Pep Hamilton, retaining Lovie Smith. My second game would be the Raiders. So we have to play the AFC West this year. We're probably going to lose all 4 games. But the Raiders are easily the worst of the bunch. And that's, I want to go with the similar rationale that I'd like to get them before they have the chance to get hot. You don't want to get a Kansas City who, when Andy Reid brings out his best stuff schematically early in the season, and I don't want to play the Chargers because, frankly, they're more talented. I don't think we're going to win that one. So if you get the Raiders, maybe you can knock them out. If you get the Raiders at in Houston, before they have a chance to really put it all together. My next game would be Washington. I really just could have picked the 4 NFC East teams and done that as my schedule, but I think Washington's going to have a bad season. Carson Wentz is not a good quarterback. He's not going to be able to hide behind Jonathan Taylor this year when he plays Houston. And I don't think they're a very good team. I'd like to play the Commanders. And then finally, Chicago. And the reasons I'd want to play Chicago are similar to Jacksonville, that Justin Fields is playing behind a makeshift offensive line. And he's going to be running for his life, if we're being honest. I'd like to get Fields before he has any chance to kind of build up confidence. And they're another team that's in for a rough 2022. So Jacksonville, Las Vegas, Washington, Chicago. And I think maybe we could start 4-0.
Okay, it's basically the same as yours, except I would want to open up against Miami because I think that Tua Tagovailoa is going to have trouble adjusting to the Mike McDaniel scheme. And so let's go ahead and have Houston play him early and try to avenge the Tyrod Taylor 3-interception loss. But anyway, so I would do week 1 against Miami. Week 2, I would want to play Jacksonville in the Liberty Whiteout game at NRG Stadium because, like you said, it's Trevor Lawrence. It's a young quarterback with the Doug Peterson scheme. And so you can take advantage of the inexperience and miscommunication there. And then for week 3, I would like to go on the road to Chicago where it's going to be a beautiful September afternoon at Soldier Field. And you're not going to have to deal with the elements at all. And maybe you could pick up a win there. Again, you're facing a young quarterback dealing with a new scheme. It with Justin Fields, so maybe you can pick up another win there. And then, finally, go back to NRG Stadium and play Washington, who will just honestly be a coin flip at that particular point because will their defense, will it start to gel a little bit? Will Wentz still be struggling? I think that they're variable enough because I feel like if you played the Giants, I think that Brian Daboll is going to have the Giants competitive by week 4. I think Dallas, you know, they take care of things under Mike McCarthy early in the year. And in Philadelphia, I also think that in year 2 of the Hurts and Sirianni relationship that they'll also be competitive. So among them that's vulnerable, Washington, and that's your pathway to 4-0 and absolute overreaction, and Davis Mills is king, and Lovie Smith told you so.
Twitter would be unreal if Houston started 4-0. Can you imagine the Davis Mills, the memes, the takes? I bet we'd have some national guys talking about him.
Well, I think Houston would have to run out to 7-1, and the Astros are done for them to get some national attention. I would be interested to see when their Thursday night game is. I was going to actually do that, but when I changed it from week one to the Dolphins as opposed to the Raiders, because I was going to have Houston doing the double Monday night triple doubleheader thing that they do against Las Vegas in that West Coast time slot for game two. And, you know, I was going to, but whatever. Yeah, I think that Houston, they would generate so much national attention if they started out 7-1 like that. But that would be crazy. And Mark, you know how many like dominoes would have to fall on the rosters of the other on their opponents for that to happen? I mean, that'd be crazy.
You're talking about 4-0 or 7-1? Which scenario?
For the 7-1. I think they can do 4-0 without anything crazy happening roster-wise in terms of, God forbid, you know, ACL or guy starts on PUP or that type of thing.
Yeah. I will say, I think they could get national attention in one game if they opened at Cleveland and won, and they beat Deshaun Watson. I think that would do it. Or regardless of when they beat Cleveland, I think that would be a national.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the Houston Deshaun Watson storyline and drama was enough to warrant a primetime game?
Absolutely, yes. Especially if it's late in the season and Watson's coming off a suspension. I mean, Houston, and more so Watson's camp, but Houston was complicit in it by virtue of having to trade him. They held the NFL hostage for 2 weeks. I absolutely think Watson playing Houston again will be a primetime game, especially if, for the ratings, I imagine he would have to be coming to Houston. That would be a good game. And I think Watson would want to play his best. I mean, to be clear, I'm putting it on the record. I think Watson is going to get the hammer. I don't think he's going to play this upcoming season. This thing's been a disaster, and the pissed off owners this week and a pissed off Roger Goodell makes me think he's not going to get to play at all. But yes, if he got to play this year, Cleveland Houston's is a primetime game. Do you think it would be?
No. I think that Houston has been so run down that there's not enough star power with Watson to really make it that interesting. That's what I think. I think if Houston still had some star power and were competitive, I think it would be. Like, let's say if Aaron Rodgers left. No, not even that. I think if Russell Wilson goes back and plays Seattle, I think that would be a primetime game. Maybe not a Sunday nighter, but Monday night or your Thursday night game. Or if it's later in the year, your 8 p.m. Eastern kickoff on NFL Network type of game. But I think that Houston has been dragged down so far that I just don't think that there's enough cachet to put that particular matchup in prime time.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I'm trying to be optimistic. It's going to turn around eventually.
It could get flexed in if they put that particular game later in the year, and then it's subject to, I mean, maybe it gets flexed in, but I just don't think in April that the schedule makers are going to say, yeah, that's the game. And we're going to put it even on a Amazon Thursday night.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Mark.
All right. So where can they follow you on Twitter as we wrap things up here? Because you're no longer Texans Doc.
Yeah. I'm not. I really am going to miss signing off as Texans Doc, but got to be professional. It's time. I'm going to be John Crumpler, MD, hopefully before I know it. So it is now at John H. Crumpler. Give me a follow. I've got two more coming in the Draft and Identity series. I'll go ahead and give a teaser here. Fridays is going to be the Fantasy Football Texans, which is what if you gave offensive coordinator Pep Hamilton as many offensive weapons as you could. And that's going to have some people upset because we might be drafting a quarterback in that one. But yeah, give me a follow. Mark, where can they find
me
you?
On Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. Find our work on Twitter at The Texans Wire and also at TexansWire.USAToday.com. Next week, we're going to try to have two Texans Talk podcasts for you. And one of them, we will be talking with, you'll never believe it, John, this is going to be a nice little, this is going to be like the multiverse of John Crumpler's here, because we're going to talk with Alabama football team surgeon, Dr. Lyle Kane of Andrews Sports Medicine, because there's two prospects from the Crimson Tide that are worth talking about. One of them, Jameis Williams, and Dr. Lyle Kane will provide some insight as to how ready these guys will be for the NFL.
I cannot wait for that. That is going to be a great interview about two stand-up prospects, both of which Houston could use.
I think we're going to bill it as that, the John Crumpler multiverse next week.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. We need
we'll have
the
three John Crumplers. Obviously. We'll have the one that's the doctor, the one that's the Houston Texans writer, and then the third one that I don't know what the third one would be. I guess
I do both.
Okay.
I do both.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Have a great morning. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.